Srila Prabhupada ki jai. ISKCON founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Ananta Koti Vaishnava Vrinda ki jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur ki jai. Prem Shikaho Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adwaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Gogopina Shyamakunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana ki jai. Vrindavan Dhamma ki jai, Mathura Dhamma ki jai, Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma ki jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma ki jai, Gangamaya Jamuna Devi ki jai, Bhakti Devi ki jai, Tulsi Maharani ki jai, Samaveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai, Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharane. Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paskacha Desatarane Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamalam Sri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitam Sam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanchakalpa Trubhyascha Kupasindhubhyeva Chapatitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namo. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
It's March 11th, 2016, Skype class from Hilo, Hawaii, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 10, Divisions of the Creation, Text 12. Vishvam vai brahma tanmatram. Samstitam Vishnu Mayaya. Ishvarena Parichinam. Kalena Vyakta Murtina. Vishvam. The material phenomenon.
Material phenomenon.
Vai. Certainly. Brahma.
Brahma.
The Supreme.
The Supreme.
Tatmatram. The same as. Oh, are we online? Are we out? Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. This cosmic manifestation is separated from the Supreme Lord as material energy by means of Kala, which is the unmanifested, impersonal feature of the Lord. It is situated as the objective manifestation of the Lord under the influence of the same material energy of Vishnu. Purport. As stated previously by Narada before Vyasadeva in Srimad Bhagavatam 1.5.20, Idam hi Vishvam Bhagavan Ivetaraha. This manifested world is the self-same personality of Godhead, but it appears to be something else beyond or besides the Lord. It appears so because of its being separated from the Lord by means of Kala. It is something like the tape-recorded voice of a person who is now separated from the voice. As the tape recording is situated on the tape, so the whole cosmic manifestation is situated on the material energy and appears separate by means of Kala. The material manifestation is therefore the objective manifestation of the Supreme Lord and exhibits his impersonal feature, so much adored by impersonalist philosophers. V. Vishvam Vibramatan Matram Samstitam Vishnu Maya Ishvare Naparitinam Kalana Vyakta Muritina. This cosmic manifestation is separated from the Supreme Lord as material energy by means of Kala, which is the unmanifested impersonal feature of the Lord. It is situated as the objective manifestation of the Lord under the influence of the same material energy, Vishnu. So Kala, time, is the first item, the first element, the first step in the material energy. It's the first step in illusion when the Lord is lying in the causal ocean. Yakarin Arnavajalay Bhajatisma Yoga Nidram Anantadagadanda Saramakupa Adhara Shaktim Avalambya Param Samurti in his great form. It's Kala that manifests from his glance. His glance at the material energy is Kala, is Lord Shiva. And this Kala separates the Lord from the material world. And therefore, finding God is very difficult. You know, if you, sometimes people who are adopted want to find their natural parents. I have some friends who are adopted, and I have some friends who gave birth to children who became adopted. And in those cases, the children trying to find the parents, sometimes it's very difficult. You know, they had closed adoptions, they would seal the records, and trying to go back and find the parents may take years. Seems to have some element of providence or luck involved. And it may seem like that for us finding God. We may feel that we've been adopted by the material energy. Durga has become our mother. And that finding our real father, Aham Bija Pradapita, is that Krishna says, I'm the father, I'm the mother, I'm the grandfather, is just seems to be impossible. You know, where is he? Where is he? Even if we come to some theoretical understanding, there must be a God, he must be like this. So he's cloud-colored. Right now the sun hasn't quite risen here. There are these beautiful Krishna-colored clouds in the sky. So he's, you know, rain cloud-colored, plays his flute, takes care of the cows. But where is he? How can I meet him, you know? But he's separated by time. And Srila Prabhupada gives this fascinating material analogy. And why am I echoing? Prabhupada gives this fascinating material analogy that he said it's like a tape recording. Of course, nowadays we don't use tapes very much. But when Srila Prabhupada was present on the planet, we used tapes. So there were, you know, reel-to-reel tape recorders. When my husband met Srila Prabhupada in 1970, he asked Srila Prabhupada what kind of tape recorder he wanted to travel with him. And Prabhupada said, that I do not know. And my husband said, no, he's 25, I guess. And he said, you thought, Prabhupada doesn't know? I thought he's a pure devotee, he has to know everything. Somehow, pure devotees are supposed to know what kind of tape recorder is the best tape recorder. And then Prabhupada paused, he said, but I've heard that Tanberg is very nice. So although my husband was a brahmachari, he had a job at the time also, so he used his earnings and he bought a very high-class Tanberg to travel with Srila Prabhupada. So Prabhupada had that big, you know, you can see in the photographs, it's got a big strap, right? And it's a kind of briefcase size machine. And of course, then there were the cassette tapes. Prabhupada would use this dictaphone. Gargamuni bought that dictaphone for Prabhupada. Prabhupada would use a dictaphone. He would record his classes. Unfortunately, really unfortunately, beyond misfortune, is that the devotees would record over those tapes. So those tapes would be mailed, and devotees would, you know, listen on headphones, and then they would type in what Prabhupada was saying. And then they would erase the tape and they would mail it back and Prabhupada would use it again. So that was an efficient use of resources. But the result is that we don't have those original recordings. We have most, not all, of the recordings of the Krishna book. So there's certain sections are just missing. You know, Prabhupada will be dictating a chapter and all of a sudden in the middle of the chapter it's just gone and then the recording starts up again, you know, 1.5 chapters later. And most of the Rasa Leela is also gone. So Prabhupada's talking about this tape recording. And you can just imagine, you know, 100 years from now, people reading this purport, what's tape recording. And we listen to the tape recording. I've listened so many times to Srila Prabhupada dictating a Krishna book, more times than I can count. And of course, we've all listened to Srila Prabhupada's recorded lectures, morning walks, room conversations, and so forth. Again, I've listened to them so many times, I can't even count how many times I've listened to them. And Prabhupada's making this analogy. He's saying that just like you listen to a recording, so in the same way this material world is separated. I was talking with my daughter the other day, who likes to tune in to Mayapur live over the internet. She lived in Mayapur for about a year. And she likes to tune into the morning program there. You know, the Mangalartik, the announcements, right? And recently there was the Kirtan Mela. And we were having a discussion about the difference between tuning into something over the internet live, like a lot of you are listening to this class live over the internet. And there's many other people who will listen to this class later on a recording. Right, Ramananda's recording it, and I'm also recording it, and then I upload the recording to ISKCON Desire Tree, and people who I download the recording, people who've never met me. I remember the first time I went to Australia, and somebody coming up to me saying, yeah, I listen to your classes all the time, and I'd never been to Australia before. I didn't know this person. I had no, you know, dealings with this person, and it was so odd to think that they had a relationship with me, even though I didn't know them. In regard to a tape recording, though, you know, there is a little difference, isn't it? Listening live, even though you're remote, right? None of you are here in this room with me. But even though you're remote, there's a different sense in listening to it live. I mean, you can ask questions at the end of the class. There was a time when I was in North Carolina, when I was going to graduate school, that I would go to the morning program at the local temple, which ended very early. The whole morning program there was over by 7:30 in the morning. And then I would tune in a little later to the Bhagavatam class in Alachua, which started about 8 o'clock. So I listened to that class live. And then many times I also listened to the Los Angeles class, which started at about 10:30 on the East Coast time. So I would go to 3 classes every morning, and all 3 of them were live. And I know in Alachua I would sometimes type in or call in a question. It wasn't quite here like it's done here. And I heard that there was even, one of the devotees told me, that they would warn the speakers, you know, or me listening to the class remotely, she may ask you a difficult question. So there's a difference, you know, when you're listening to the recording, that's at a different time. You can't ask the question. You know, right now I've been listening to Srila Prabhupada's recordings of his lectures on nectar devotion. For so many years I've listened to his Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita classes over and over again, and I got into listening to his nectar devotion lectures, and now I've been cycling through all of them. He only speaks on the very beginning of nectar devotion, and if not all, then the vast majority of them are in India, mostly in Vrindavan. So I can't ask a question. You know, I can't interact with the recording. But even if we don't ask a question, I don't know, there's some sense when we're listening, even remotely, live. But having said that, there is a difference between listening live and listening to a recording, and you can't ask a question of a recording and so forth. My first personal experience with Srila Prabhupada, the first time I saw Srila Prabhupada in the same room physically, I was already initiated. I had gotten initiated by mail in December of 1973. Srila Prabhupada sent a letter. I accept her as my initiated disciple, and her name is Urmila Devi Dasi. And he instructed one of his GBC men to chant all my beads. That was what Srila Prabhupada had been doing at the time. I don't have those beads anymore. And then the temple president performed the fire yajna. So I gave my vows to the temple president, and Prabhupada accepted me by mail. So I hadn't seen Srila Prabhupada. I mean, I saw Srila Prabhupada then the next summer, June or July, I think it was July, 1974 when Srila Prabhupada came to Chicago for the first Rath Yatra. And I went with the group to meet Srila Prabhupada at the airport, but due to various circumstances, I'm missing him. Basically, I used to distribute books at the airport, and I helped the out-of-town devotees to figure out where to park their car and how to walk through the airport. And so I was with him, and by the time we arrived at the gate to greet Srila Prabhupada, he had already finished greeting the devotees, and he had just gotten in a car to go to the temple, so I didn't see him at all. I didn't see him till the next morning when he was sitting on the Vyasasan, and I stood right next to the Vyasasan, fanning Srila Prabhupada with the peacock feather fan for, I remember it as being the whole lecture, but perhaps it was just a major part of the lecture. Yeah, and just as a side note, there are some people who say, well, you know, the women shouldn't offer arti to Prabhupada. And I was 19 years old, and Prabhupada had no objection to my standing, you know, 2 feet from the Vyasasan, half a meter, whatever, and fanning him. So as I listened to Srila Prabhupada, you know, Prabhupada on the Vyasasan was generally very formal. He was in the mood of the founder Acharya, and his demeanor was generally, not always, but generally very grave and formal. And I found that my experience of listening to Srila Prabhupada just, you know, a short distance away, and doing some personal service for him, hearing him, there was absolutely no difference between that, completely no difference between that and listening to a recording. None whatsoever. And I had all these expectations that when I saw Srila Prabhupada face to face, it would be a qualitatively different experience. You know, perhaps I was expecting, you know, fireworks, something like that. No, that didn't happen. It just didn't happen. I didn't have that kind of experience at all. I felt like I was listening to a tape. You know, I remember also when I first moved into the ashram. Actually, when I first stayed in the ashram, I didn't stay permanently. I just visited for a couple weeks. I was underage. The devotees would play Prabhupada's recorded lectures every morning during breakfast. And it took a week before I could even understand him with the accent. You know, it's also easier to understand somebody when you have the body language, facial expressions, and so forth, when you're just listening to a recording. So it took some time before I could even understand the English. But there I was, right, with Prabhupada, and there was no difference. So it was a very enlivening and wonderful experience that there was no difference. Because that fact of there being no difference communicated to me that I had always been with Srila Prabhupada. In fact, my very first contact with the Hare Krishna movement was also hearing a recording of Srila Prabhupada. My sister lived on the Lower East Side of New York, just a couple blocks from 26th Second Avenue. And I would visit her regularly, her and her family. And when I would visit her, I would often just kind of wander around the neighborhood. You know. So there was a shop there called the Krishna Shop. It was run by Alan Coleman, who had produced the Happening album of Srila Prabhupada chanting. And I would walk into his shop. I found it fascinating. He had all these Brijvasi posters of Krishna and Vishnu and Hanuman and so forth. So I would look at the posters, and then he was always playing this record album. It wasn't a tape recorder, but similar thing, record album, because he had produced it and he was trying to sell it. So I would go and just listen to this recording of Srila Prabhupada chanting. That was my first contact. And the way that I ended up visiting a temple a couple years later, I was listening to the radio when they played the Radhakrishna Temple album, which George Harrison had produced. And they played the Brahma Samhita, what the section with Jamuna singing that we play in all of our temples every morning when we greet the deities. And it was hearing that which induced me to buy the record album. And by the record album, I ended up meeting somebody who'd been to a temple, and that person ended up bringing me to the temple, etc. So my first connection with Srila Prabhupada, with the Hare Krishna movement, was all through recorded sound. And when I was listening to Srila Prabhupada on the personally on the Vyasa Sun and having this experience as if I was listening to a tape recording, I felt that. I felt that recorded sound was the same. In other words, I had been associating with Srila Prabhupada from the moment when I was 12 years old that I listened to that record in the Krishna store. I had been in Srila Prabhupada's presence. And that after Prabhupada left Chicago and went on to his next place, I could still be in Srila Prabhupada's presence by listening to his recordings. And I feel that today also. When I turn on a lecture by Srila Prabhupada or a book dictation by Srila Prabhupada. And of course, the books where you don't even hear Prabhupada's voice, although I think it's Chandramouli Swami who said that one time when he was reading Prabhupada's books, all of a sudden he heard Prabhupada's, actually heard Prabhupada's voice speaking in purport. So we're with Srila Prabhupada. Completely. At the same time, one can say it is a separated energy. As I said, you can't ask a question of the class. You don't. There's something about being there live. There is something. So both. It's both there. Just like when the gopis are told, first by Uddhava when he read Krishna's letter and later directly by Krishna at Kurukshetra during the eclipse, well, what's your problem? Krishna's here. Just meditate on Krishna. Krishna's there in all the elements, Krishna says at Kurukshetra. So, I'm all the material elements, which is what we're talking about here. All the material elements, they're me. Right, as Prabhupada says in this purport, this manifested world is the same personality of Godhead. It is Krishna. It's not just Krishna's energy. It is Krishna. And Krishna told the gopis at Kurukshetra, it's me. Your body, your mind, Kamano Buddha Evacha, your mind, your intelligence is me. You're always with me. This idea that I'm not here, it's an illusion. But they weren't satisfied. They said, no, we don't want to be gyanis or yogis. And we want you personally. Now you could say, well, does that mean the gopis were interested in one of the five kinds of liberation? One of the five kinds of liberation is to be in the personal presence of the Lord. No, they wanted to be in Krishna's personal presence because only then could they serve him to his full satisfaction, which they could not do just in meditation. You know, I can meditate on feeding you. Of course, when you meditate on feeding Krishna, it's the same principle as the tape recording. Sachi Devi would meditate on feeding Lord Chaitanya and he sent that message to her. He said, sometimes I eat. He said, sometimes I eat such that the plate becomes empty. And you think, I guess I didn't put any food on the plate when I made the offering, or Nisinghananda Brahmachari, who made his mental offerings, and then he saw that Lord Chaitanya had eaten everything. Or making the road of jewels, and he couldn't go past Kanai Natashala because Lord Chaitanya factually wasn't going to go past there. Prabhupada says, chanting Hare Krishna means you make a diamond throne for Krishna in your heart, you see Krishna there, and you bathe him with Ganga and Jamuna water. He says, you imagine it, and then he says, but it is real. So there is a sense in which meditation on Krishna and offering service to Krishna in meditation is fully accepted and relished by the Lord. The Lord is eating our food with his eyes. You know, I put my offering in front of my deities, and I meditate on them eating the food. And when I look at the plate, all the food is still there. Of course, the taste has changed, but all the food is still there. Of course, he can also make it disappear, as we said, like with Lord Chaitanya and Sachi. So in one sense, it's the same. But in another sense, it's not quite the same. Srinath Chakravarti Thakur explains that from bhava to prema, the difference is that in the state of bhava, the devotee is in their spiritual body, fully reciprocating with the Lord in the heart. And then at prema, the Lord disappears from the heart and appears externally to the vision of the devotee. This happened, of course, with Dhruva Maharaj. with Narada Muni, where they're meditating on the Lord in the heart, and then the Lord disappears from the heart, and there he is. And of course, this is the devotee wants that, no matter how much the tape recording was Srila Prabhupada. I also wanted to see Srila Prabhupada. I would, if I could see Srila Prabhupada personally walk in my room. I'm reading Srila Prabhupada's books pretty much every day. It's a very rare day that I don't read Srila Prabhupada's books. It's a rare day I don't hear Srila Prabhupada's voice. That's very unusual. Oh, you're with Prabhupada, what's the problem? But if Srila Prabhupada were to walk in my door and sit in my room, physically, personally, glorious. I'm hearing Krishna's words, serving the Murti. Just like, you know, Lord Chaitanya gave Raghunath Das Goswami his Govardhan Shila, and it says that Raghunath Das Goswami, he would see the Lord in the stone. It's described that way about that devotee, Krishna Priya. He said one day she saw Nandanandana in her Govardhan Shila, and it was a great festival. So the separated energy is here understood as kala. What is it that we experience the world as separated from the Lord? We experience the world as if it is a recording of the Lord rather than the Lord directly. So kala, of course, interesting, Srila Prabhupada identifies kala with the Brahma Jyoti in this verse. Kala is also very much associated with Lord Shiva, that this glance of the Lord to awaken Maya, this glance of time, is Shiva. That Shiva is the personification of time. So we're going to look at Lord Shiva as the personification of Ahankara in terms of the enjoyer, as the manifestation of anger and destruction, and also as the greatest Vaishnava. So this time is false ego. It's the sense that I am the enjoyer. Ishwaraham, aham bogi, siddham. We have this two-legged animal right now in America trying to be president of the United States. And he's a good epitome or personification of this false ego principle. He's constantly telling everybody how smart he is and how victorious he is. You know, he could practically be, you know, he's practically saying the verses out of the 16th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. There is none as perfect and powerful as I am. I am happy. You know, I have defeated all my enemies. Don't be my enemy. I'll cut you down. So this mood separates us from Krishna. I'm the best. Everything is meant for my pleasure. I am wonderful. I am God. As soon as we have this mood, then we can't see God. Right? Then, in fact, we steal from God. We're trying to enjoy his property. I'm rereading a book that had been assigned to me in graduate school called The Cheating Culture. And it's talking about how in many spheres of life, particularly in America, but I'm sure it's universally applicable, that there's so much cheating, and that one of the main reasons people cheat is they feel that they've been dealt with unfairly and they have a right to cheat in order to equalize them. That what they're getting by cheating belongs to them rightfully. So this is the mood of this ahankara. I am the rightful enjoyer. Now, when I don't have enjoyment, it's because someone has taken it from me illegally, and I have the right to take it back. You know, I woke up this morning with extreme physical pain. And the initial reaction is, you know, why me? For any of our suffering, why am I suffering? I'm such a wonderful person. It's there's someone has stolen my pleasure illegally, I have a right to enjoy. I have a right to be the owner of all enjoyment. I have a right to a successful life. I have a right to win. I've read about the people who get second place in the Olympics and they're just devastated. Third place. Or just speak of fourth place when they don't even get a medal, right? I don't know, just devastated. I should have been the winner. Now my life is over. And this mood separates us from Krishna because Krishna is the enjoyer. He's the winner, Ajita. He's the one who's never conquered except in Leela by love. Now, how can I see him if I'm trying to take his place? If you steal something, you can only steal something when you don't really see the being or beings from whom you're stealing as being persons with a right to what you're taking from them. If you steal something from someone, you think it's yours. It belongs to you. You can't simultaneously see that it belongs to them and they have the right to it and steal it from them. You know, the people who are eating meat, they think the animals don't have the right to their own life. They think the animals don't have the right to their own skin. Not that. Can you imagine that? So what's meat? Meat is just muscle. If I went to you and held your arm and said, that muscle's mine. You got to give it to me. It's mine. It's yours. It's on my arm. or rape. Your body is for me to just take and enjoy. Wait, it's my body. I have to voluntarily share it with you. No, I can just take it. So this false ego makes us thieves and rapists of the material energy. This material energy is for me to enjoy. However I want, we're basically trying to rape Durga Devi. We're trying to steal Krishna's energy. We're trying to take it by force. It's mine. It belongs to me. What was his name? Tried to kidnap Draupadi. So she's mine. Kichak and who's the other? And they try to kidnap Draupadi. She's got five husbands. She's kind of already taken. No, she's mine. Reading the story of Mohini Murti, and the demons see Mohini and they say, "Oh, you're just wandering alone. You must not belong to anybody. You must belong to me." Even Rukmini, when she got, when she left the temple and she was walking, looking for Krishna, and the kings and the princes there, oh, she's mine. She's mine. So as soon as I think it's mine, then I can't see the actual owner. The actual owner ceases to be personal to me. In order to eat meat, you have to personalize the animals. It just has to be pork. I saw a video the other day of a middle-aged couple who got married, and the man was a cattle rancher. He raised cows for slaughter. And when he got married, he told his wife, "Don't give names to the cows." But she didn't listen to him. She went out in the fields. She gave names to the cows, she would talk to them, she would sing to them, and then she couldn't eat them anymore. She ended up becoming a vegan. She couldn't eat the cows anymore. And she ended up collecting donations to buy out her husband's cows. And she started an animal protection farm. As soon as you give them names, as soon as they're persons, then all of a sudden you see, I don't have the right to take from them. So as soon as one understands God is a person, I can't take from him. Therefore, when we have this false ego, God appears impersonal. And then there's Lord Shiva as anger and destruction. He personifies the destruction of the universe in his anger. And we all have experienced that when we're angry, we lose our sense of love and connection with people. I even get people that love each other that would sacrifice their lives for each other. You know, as intimate family members, they'd give each other their kidneys, they'd give each other a piece of their liver. They'd push them out of a way of a train and get killed by the train themselves. They would die for that person. They're sacrificing for that person day and night. And yet, when there's anger, they'll say, "I hate you. I'm leaving. I never want to see you again. I wish you would die." Right? Half of all murders, at least in civilized countries, is of intimate romantic partners. Usually the man killing the woman, sometimes the woman killing the man. And many times after they kill their romantic partner, they're so devastated they kill themselves. What did I do? What did I do? So when anger, we can't see, we can't experience, we don't feel that the other one's a person, a loving relationship with the person. It clouds us. So time in the form of anger. Of course, we're very angry because we're not the enjoyer, because I'm trying to rape and steal and it's not working very well. I'm not a very successful thief. So we become very angry. And this separates us from Krishna. Again, we can't see Krishna as a person. But all is not lost, because Lord Shiva, Vaishnava Yata Sambhu, Lord Shiva is also the greatest devotee. Although time gives us a sense of being the enjoyer and the controller, that I'm the doer, I do this and therefore this happens. And time also makes us angry as we lament for the past and we hanker for the future. So time as the greatest devotee also can allow us to see Krishna. How Krishna is making the sun rise and set. Krishna is the beginning, the middle, the end of all things. The unfolding of a flower in time. You know, you can't take a bud. If you take a flower bud and you try to forcibly open it, you break it. But how it unfolds magically in time, how the baby in time goes from a little speck in the womb to the walking, talking, functioning body. The glory of God is manifest in time. All the avatars that appear at different times. Yada yada hi dharmasya gnanir bhavati bharata yukta nama dharmasya tadatmanam srijamyaham vritranaya sadhanam vinashaya jivskuta dharmastam sapanar pattaya sambhavani yuge yuge. In each yuga, at each time. This is the time when Rama appeared. This is the time when Kurma appeared. This is the time when Krishna appeared. And the events of the Lord's Leela bring us closer to Him. Using our time, waking up early before the sun, bathing, worshiping the deity, chanting the mantras, using that time, we connect with the Lord. So we can also, the Lord Shiva is also our friend. As the greatest devotee, he's the head of the Rudra Sampradaya. Lord Shiva gives the prayers to the Prachetas, how to worship Krishna. Lord Shiva also drinks the ocean of poison to benefit the living entities. The principle of Lord Shiva is that of extreme sacrifice for the Lord, extreme giving to the Lord. And then the Lord's not impersonal anymore. As soon as we sacrifice the Lord and give to Him and use Him in His energy, then Premanjana Charita Bhakti Vilotanena Santa Sadaiva Ridayeshu Vilokayanti Yam Shaima Sundarama Chinchagunaswarupa. We don't just see in an impersonal way then that everything's connected with Krishna. We see everything's connected with Krishna, the person. We reestablish, revive, uncover our personal relationship with the Lord, which is always there, it's eternal. There's a group of Gaudiyas who are preaching now that our relationship, our personal relationship with the Lord has a beginning. That somehow we are persons without a personal relationship with the Lord. Which is, of course, the very definition of Maya. Anything that appears to be separate from the Lord doesn't have any reality. But as we, the truth is that as we use the Lord's energy in his service, as we see the connection with him, as we see that it belongs to him, then that original relationship we have with the Lord, which is a very personal and individual relationship, becomes uncovered. And then we come to the point that we see, oh, Krishna was always here personally. Now that starts with the kind of response I had to Srila Prabhupada. It starts with that. It starts with, oh, although this is separated by time, Krishna is still here in his energy. And eventually that mood attracts Krishna so much that he does appear face to face. It's not simply separated energy. So that is our goal. The problem is that we're very attached to our false ego. We like our false ego. Ahankara Ashrita, Krishna says, we take shelter of the false ego. We think our false ego is our identity. We think it's our sense of self. We think without our false ego, we'll be nothing. We don't understand that we have, not only is God a person behind the impersonal manifestation, so we are also persons without beginning. Our spiritual personality doesn't need to be created. It cannot be created. It's not created by Guru. It's not created even by Krishna. It always exists. Nor do we create it. It's not something we're developing. It's something we're uncovering. We don't have to be afraid that if I get rid of the false ego, there'll be nothing there. And then I'll have to develop some new relationship. Now, when we get rid of the false ego, then what we already are becomes revealed. What Krishna already is becomes revealed. And then there's no question of separated energy. Everything is Krishna. So questions, comments?
Influence is conspicuous by its absence. And he'd use that phrase for other things as well, but mostly for time. Is he saying this literally or just figuratively? In other words,
saying,
you know,
what exactly? Can you repeat that?
When he says that time's influence is conspicuous by its absence in the spiritual world. Does that mean that so you're in the spiritual world and you're always thinking, so where's time? Boy, it's not here anymore.
I'm sure you're always thinking about Krishna.
Saying that, or is he just figuratively like a cliche?
Well, even material time, Prabhu, is basically impossible to detect. There's a nice article, two nice articles by Matt Teresh in Back to God, and you can find them online on krishna.com about time. And I've also spoken on it. In one of the articles, he speaks about the fact that time has no corresponding sensory organ. You know, the ear is associated with space, the eye is associated with fire, and so forth. The skin is associated with air. But there's no sensory organ associated with time. So we really don't know exactly what time is. We can't really perceive time directly at all. And the material scientists also, what is time? What we call time in this world is the relationship of objects to each other in motion. The relationship of the sun to the earth in motion, the sun to the moon in motion, the sun to the stars in motion, relationship in motion, how things change in movement. And the other way we measure time is how things change in composition. So, you know, you put out an orange and it gradually rots, it decomposes. It changes its identity. Like yesterday, I noticed that my Giriraj's flute had broken, and I went to find a replacement flute in my bag, and I went through all this stuff, and I kept the flutes with extra gunja berries, and some bugs had gotten into the gunja berries, and gunja berries were 90% powder. Couple hours yesterday doing cleaning up that mess. So it changed what it was. Right? This my fingernail, my hair, so that was, you know, rice. And then it becomes hair, and then I cut my hair, and then it becomes earth. So that's how we understand time, that things change their identity. You have, you know, there's sunshine, water, and earth. That's what it is. And then it's a tree. It's a tree outside. The tree doesn't look like it's made out of sunshine, water, and earth. It looks like it's a tree. And then on the tree, there's a, you know, orange. It's an orange. It was a tree, and then it became an orange. For that it was sunlight and water and earth, and then I eat it, and it's no longer an orange. It's skin and hair and bones. And then the body is burned and becomes ashes. And as it burns, it produces fire like the sun. It produces ashes like the earth minerals. It produces smoke and water vapor. It turns back into light and water and minerals. It doesn't have time is what gives things their inconsistent identity. Therefore, we say it's a world of names. So those two things are conspicuous by their absence. Everything keeps its identity. There's no change in identity. You know, a tree is a tree. Of course, the pure living entities can change their form. I mean, even the demigods can assume different forms. But still, it is what it is. And I'm not Urmila Devi Dasi, the daughter of my parents and the mother of my children and the wife of my husband. I'm not those things. That's just a upadhi. It's just a designation. But time being conspicuous by its absence, that's what you are. And that's what you always are. Again, this concept that we weren't originally a person in relationship to Krishna. That's a very strange concept if time is conspicuous by its absence. I've always been a person in relationship with Krishna, in a specific relationship with Krishna, always. Without beginning, without end. And that never changes. Krishna says the soul is unchangeable. Now, as far as being conspicuous by its absence, it's interesting that if you read accounts of out-of-body experiences, near-death experiences, one thing that's almost universal is people reporting that there was no time. I mean, we even have a time distortion in a dream. You know, you can have a dream that a week goes by in your dream and you've only been sleeping for 10 minutes and you get a distorted sense of time when you dream. But it's very common for people who have out-of-body experiences to say that there's no time. And they notice the absence of time. Now, how do you notice the absence of time when we don't even notice time? I don't know. And the people who report that, they say that it's indescribable. They simply knew that there was no time. Now, what does it mean that there's no time in the spiritual world, that everything is eternal? Yet there's the Astakalila Lila, there's a sequence of events. There's this movement, like, you know, I say time, I'm talking about how time is movement of one object in relationship to another. So I'm here at this geographic location in my room. I walk to another geographic location in my room. I have changed my location. I've changed my relationship with the things around me due to some movement, and such indicates time has elapsed. So in the spiritual world, there is no such thing. There's no such thing as space. And yet Krishna is walking and he's dancing. So how can I understand that Krishna is walking and dancing and there's a sequence of events, and yet there's nothing that demarcates that some time has elapsed? It's always now, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. I mean, we can theorize and do philosophical speculation that everything that happens is always happening. And yet there's newer and newer things. So how can they be new if they've always been there? How can Radharani cook a new preparation every day if there's no change? You know, the fact that there's no time and no change leads people to think, well, that must be impersonal. I'm echoing. Now, how can there be persons? How can there be persons who do activities? How can there be movement and yet have no time? It must be impersonal. As soon as you have persons, our understanding is there must be time. How can Krishna always be expanding and yet be unchangeable? How can there be newer and newer pastimes every day if everything is eternal without beginning? I don't know. Sounds fun, though. That you have this beginningless, unchangeless, ever-existing everything, and yet always expanding and always new. So part of the constant experience of the residence there is a sense of timelessness. Just like part of my constant experience here is some sort of an idea of time. I don't know about all of you, but I have a pretty much constant anxiety in relationship to time. Pretty much constant. I have things to do. And again, I don't know about all of you, but I never have enough time to do everything that I have to do. I have to break to sleep, to eat, to use the toilet, so many things. You know, I'll be working, and then my body and mind get so tired that I can't work anymore. I have to stop. So that, you know, sleep is going to come. Disease is going to come. Death is going to come. Those three things are for sure. They will come in the future and stop what I'm doing. Therefore, I have to hurry up and do what I'm doing. I have a sense of time. And for those who are liberated, they have a sense of eternity, just like I have a sense of time. If you have a sense of eternity, you have a sense of freedom. You have a great sense of peace. So in that way, it's conspicuous by its absence. I don't think we can describe it fully. I think it's something one has to experience. But, you know, like other experiences, I had the experience when I went into the Chinese embassy in Auckland, New Zealand. I went with some other devotees to get a visa. As soon as we went into the embassy, we felt fear and oppression. Or when I'm in South Africa, I immediately feel fear. It's like it's in the air. So we have a sense of time. We're feeling it constantly. It pervades everything that we do. And those who are liberated have a sense of timelessness that pervades everything that they do. But it's not that they're always conscious in it, you know, that they're thinking just about that. They're thinking about how to please Krishna. That's a very long answer. I hope that's okay.
No, that was elegant. That was wonderful. We have Vidugda Madhava and we have Mother Candida. So,
all right, let's take Vidugda Madhava.
Hare Krishna.
Hi, Krishna.
Hi, Krishna Prabhu. To my shock, I have heard some devotees say that in the spiritual world, because there's no change or time, that there's no baby Krishna's pastimes there for those who have eternal relationship with Lord Krishna as mother and father. And
that really bothers you.
And that's only in the material world. And I, you know, that doesn't seem right to me that, you know, it seems like there must be some places in the spiritual world where there's an eternal relationship of mother and father to child Krishna. And, you know, and but, you know, they think that, no, you know, he's always... as a 16-year-old youth.
Well, actually, so it's true. Prabhupada who says that. Prabhupada says that in Goloka that Krishna only appears in his Kishora manifestation. However, the devotees have their eternal relationship with Krishna. And their dealings with Krishna are in that relationship. When Mother Yasoda sees Krishna and the field of Kurukshetra, milk comes out of her breasts. You know, he's married with children. You know, when I see my sons who are married with children, I don't have milk coming out of my breast. We're trying to put something different on it. I don't think I could find it immediately. I don't know if I could find it right away. I can try. Let me see if I can find this for you, because it will make you feel better if I can find it.
Okay.
Where that all of Krishna's ages are there at all times.
Okay. That's what I understood.
Yeah, well, they are, but that's according to... Oh, no, I didn't save it. That's terrible. I remember I sent the quote to some friends of mine who had the same question, but I obviously didn't save it in my Nectar file. Sorry about that. Anyway, there's a place where the Acharyas make the point that all of Krishna's forms, or all of his ages particularly, are always present. So although it's a fact that Krishna in the spiritual world doesn't have some birth pastime, and in one sense is always there as a teenager, on the other hand, the people in the different rasas, they see Krishna and relate with Krishna in whatever age they're most attracted. Just like Lord Kapiladev says that the Lord appears in the form in which we worship him. And by the way, this goes the other way too. So the young gopis who are attracted to Krishna as a teenager, when Krishna's a baby, they don't really see him as a baby. We found this happen with Prajumna and Rakti. Krishna's son Prajumna was put into a fish, and when Rakti, his wife, rescued him, she had understood from Narada Muni that she was his wife, that she was Prajumna's wife. So, of course, Prajumna was in a baby form, and she was taking care of him as you would take care of a child. And as soon as he matured, then she started behaving with him as an amorous partner. And he was a little shocked. He said, wait a minute, that's not proper. You know, the mother and son relationship doesn't become an amorous relationship. She said, no, it was always an amorous relationship. I'm your wife. So those who have a romantic, amorous relationship with Krishna, when they see baby Krishna, they don't see baby Krishna, they see teenage Krishna. And when those who have a parental relationship with Krishna see teenage Krishna, they don't see teenage Krishna, they see baby Krishna. Mother Yasoda was putting Krishna on her lap at Kurukshetra. You know, again, we have some idea in this world, a little idea. I remember, you know, when I was in my 40s and my father saw me and he said, "Oh, my baby." I said, "I'm not your baby, I'm a grandmother." And he said to me, "You're always my baby." So the little idea, you know, a little bit of an idea in this world that, you know, I'm sure Michelle Obama, when she sees her husband, she sees him as her husband, even though she knows he's the president. Her relationship with him doesn't change when they're at a state dinner, although she may not manifest it. There's a nice story. And you know what? I'm going to share my screen with you guys for a minute.
So yeah, the spirit world is just inconceivable.
It really is inconceivable, and we know we try to put something material on it. We can have some idea that the father sees his 45-year-old child still as a baby. You know, we can have some idea, but. Okay, I'm going to show you something. I'm going to share my screen. How do I do this? Am I sharing it yet? Is it there?
No.
Not yet. I clicked on share.
You hit share, the one that looks like a little monitor?
I see what I had to do. Okay, can you see my screen now?
Yes.
Okay, you see, this is a painting. It's going to be in our Manashiksha book. This is Raghunathas Goswami is talking about serving Radha Krishna. He's also talking about Krishna as the son of Nanda Maharaj. So this is a story that's described in the Brahma Vibharata Purana. I think in Canto 4. It's also described by Prabodhananda Sarasvati in a commentary to a verse of Gita Govinda. So Nanda Maharaj had taken out the cows and calves to a faraway pasture across the Jamuna in Bandiravan. And he had taken his little son, his baby son Krishna, with him. You know, so sometimes the father does that. He takes his little son, takes his little child. So Krishna couldn't have been a tiny baby, because you don't take a tiny baby away from his mother for that long. Maybe he was like 2 or 3. And took him out there, and then a great storm came with wind and rain and so many things. And then Nanda Maharaj, in the storm, he needed both arms and his full attention in order to gather the cows and the calves and take them back across the Jamuna to Nandagram. At the same time, his boy was very little, and if he put him down in this great storm, the child might get lost. So he didn't know how he could continue to take care of his child and take care of the cows. So of course, at this point in the manifestation on earth, Radharani is going to be very young. She's about a year younger than Krishna, so she's also going to be a little baby. But all of a sudden, she appears as a teenage, youthful forest goddess. And she runs to Nanda Maharaj and says, "I will take your baby for you, and I'll bring your baby home." So she appears as fully grown and youthful. And in the Brahma Vaivarta Purana, Nanda Maharaj says, "My son is the Supreme Lord, and you are his eternal consort." Now, of course, when the residents of Vrindavan understand Krishna to be the Lord, it doesn't interfere with their basic raga. It doesn't interfere with their rasa. like what happened with Arjuna when he saw the universal form. He says, I understand you're the eternal consort of my son. This was saying, I can trust you. You know, I'm going to trust you with Krishna. And he says, you can have him. And when you're finished with enjoying with him, then you please return him to me. So he gives baby Krishna to Radharani, and then he takes the calves and cows back across the Yamuna. You can kind of see in the background of the picture, there's a Nandagram on the hill in the distance, and between Bandirvan and the hill, there's the Yamuna. So Radharani's holding baby Krishna, hugging him, and then she sees a palace. As she enters the palace, infant Krishna is all of a sudden youthful Krishna, and she sees this, you know, very handsome, full-grown, youthful Krishna there in the palace. And at that point, Lord Brahma and the demigods arrive, and Lord Brahma prays to them, and he performs a yajna where he acts as Radha's father, giving her to Krishna in marriage. And Radha and Krishna go through all of the yajna of a wedding. And in Bandiravan, there's a banyan tree there in Bandiravan, where there's a temple there that commemorates this pastime. So the demigods shower flowers, and then Radha and Krishna have their lila as husband and wife, their amorous lila. And then at the end of that, they're, as they often do, they're dressing and ornamenting each other, and as Radharani is dressing and ornamenting Krishna, all of a sudden he's there as an infant again. So then she takes him and she carries him back across the Yamuna and gives him to Mother Yasoda. When she gives him to Yasoda, she says, you know, that I had to carry this child, he was hungry, and, you know, I went through so much difficulty, please take him. She says, I'm now very late, I have to go home. And then in her home, again, she appeared as a little baby. So this is a very interesting lila of the Lord. But in any case, the devotee's relationship with the Lord is always in that particular mood. And therefore, no matter, you know, as Krishna may be standing there at 16, but Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj, they don't see that. You know, like, why doesn't Mother Yasoda worry about Krishna and the girls? Because she thinks Krishna's too young. Krishna's so young, he's not going to be interested in girls. That's how she sees him. And Krishna reciprocates with how he's seen. So certainly there's no lack. There's nothing, it's not that there's something, you know, missing in the spiritual world. Okay, I'm going to stop sharing my screen. Vidugda Madhava, we've gotten a little late, but Vidugda Madhava. Sure.
Thank you so much. Wow.
You're welcome. Vidugda Madhava, what was your question?
Oh, I'm sorry. I got to unmute him because there was an echo. I had to mute him.
Okay.
Sorry, Vidugda. Now you're muted again. Bah. Got it. There you go. Okay. Maybe I should, since you asked for a question, maybe I should start with a question.
Well, whatever you want to say. You have to have a comment, that's fine too.
Okay, I'll start with that comment and then I'll hit the question at the end. A great class, as usual, you know, profound. I was very charmed by your personal experience with Srila Prabhupada and how his recorded talks were very much, you know, you having the same experience with Prabhupada, and it reminded me of the Vani and the Bapu Association, and how Prabhupada's told us that the Vani is more important. And I've seen over the years, the more substantial disciples have a deep relationship with Srila Prabhupada's Vani. And it also, it struck me, you know, these verses on time, you handle it all so beautifully. Anyway, the Lord, he has his personal association and his remote
association also through his inconceivable potency. So we're encouraged by our guru, the Acharyas in the line, to associate with him remotely through the, you know, the medium of the parampara, through the instructions of guru, through his holy name, his deity form, until one day we're invited into his personal presence in his eternal abode. So although you answered so beautifully the question Kundita came up with, the thought came to my mind, you know, there is the roadshow. It's constantly going on. Krishna is displaying his pastimes in the Mahatattvas. And so if someone is very attached to a certain kind of service that's available there, what's the harm?
Right. Well, that's
internally associated.
Exactly. And that's another answer is that Mother Yasoda and Nanda Maharaj and all the other devotees in parental love, maybe you're one of them, Kundita. You know, that there, maybe that was coming from some swelling inner desire of yours. But the devotees who are in this parental love, they also can have an expansion in the material world. You know, it's not that when Krishna's here on this planet that Goloka is vacant, you know. They're in both places. So, yeah, they're experiencing also in Krishna's material manifestation, being pregnant with Krishna and giving birth to Krishna and you know, watching little baby Krishna grow up as described in the Bhagavatam, and watching him turn over and getting his first teeth and saying his first broken language. And you know, I was with my daughter and my 2-year-old grandson, her nephew, my grandson, and we were talking about how Krishna likes to be 2 years old also. You know, that there's some pleasure the Lord gets by having this little baby form, having this little, you know, childhood form of this simple innocence. So Krishna also enjoys that. Yes, that's, the Lord is eternally enjoying that particular rasa, kila rasa nita murti. We worship Krishna as the supreme, as the original over his other manifestations, precisely because he has all possible tastes happening simultaneously. You know, Nisingadev doesn't have this taste of childhood. He appears full grown from a pillar. He doesn't even have a relationship with a mother, you know, the pillar's his mother. Or Varaha, who appears from Brahma's nostril, you know, Korma, who just kind of appears. Vamandev, who appears from Aditi, but he grows up immediately. You know, just like Ram, Krishna, Balaram. They're experiencing this childhood time. You know, the Lord is in the womb of Devaki. As some say, he was in Mother Yasoda's womb too, but he's in Devaki's womb. You know, I don't remember being in my mother's womb, but I know as the mother, there's a certain relationship you have with your child when they're in the womb. It's a very special relationship. It's you know, when you're pregnant with a child, your relationship with them is very secret. You know, people don't see the child, but you're feeling the child's movements, and you have a constant awareness of the child. It's a very unique kind of relationship. You know, these unfortunate demoniac people who are in favor of abortion, they're so foolish. They say it's the woman's body. It's not the woman's body, it's the baby's body. Hare Krishna. So Krishna has this relationship also. So he has Akila Rasa Mita Murti.
Can I say one last thing?
Sure, and then we really should go because it is late.
Okay. My favorite possibly my favorite part of Chaitanya Charitamrita is Madhya 2. And Krishnadas Kaviraj is giving a glimpse into the next section of the Leela where Mahaprabhu is going in and out of ecstasy. So in the mood of Radharani, he's quoting verses from the Jagannath Bhava Natika by Ramananda Roy. And one of those verses goes, it's the 36th verse, if by chance the transcendental form of Krishna comes before the path of my vision, my heart, injured from being beaten, will be stolen away by Cupid, happiness personified, because I could not see the beautiful form of Krishna to my heart's content. When I again see his form, I shall decorate the phases of time with many jewels.
Decorate the phases of time with many jewels. Oh.
Right.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.